Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and of course, I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, and we're recording this in the past, so no, we have no idea what happened in the election. Don't even ask, but welcome, Drea Kaufman.
And that would be the U.S. election.
That's
y'all.
True, yes.
Because apparently we have a lot of listeners in the Australian
area. I'm sure they're paying attention because everybody likes to comment on our politics, whether they live here or not. So
it's like a salacious thing to do. I don't blame them.
Exactly. It's kind of like how we all like watching the British royal family, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That's true. Except for maybe those in the Commonwealth don't want to be in the Commonwealth. Yeah, but anyway, we're getting real deep here. So yeah, no, we have no idea. We are not fortune tellers. We are just coming off Halloween, though. And my little one was Rapunzel from Tangled and got a call out from Zachary Levi on Instagram. So I've never been a prouder parent in my life.
Nice. Zachary Levi, he's so dreamy.
He is so dreamy, I'm not going to lie. But that is the highlight of my 2020. Is the snow from last episode and the Insta celeb call out. So
well done. I haven't had any of those, so you know, I'm just not as cool, which is okay. But if you want to follow us, you can do that on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/the Nerd Party. We are on Instagram, so you can follow us there at The Nerd Party. We've got The Nerd Party.
If you're a celebrity, call us out.
Yeah, that would be great. Especially maybe a Harry Potter celebrity. Call us out. JK, where you at, girl? And then, of course, you can find us on thenerdparty.com where you can see all of the shows that we're doing. And, of course, you can write us an email at the contact section. And, you know, make sure you're subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. So, Drea, we are at Chapter 21, The Tale of Three Brothers. And I think that this is a very interesting beginning because, of course, we pick up right where we left off with this idea of the Deathly Hallows. And Xenophilius begins to explain the Deathly Hallows and that by wearing this mark, it's not something that's dark. It's not something in any way, shape, or form that's bad. It's just a way of people saying, hey, I'm on the quest, and if you know what this is, then you'd recognize that they're on the quest as well. So it's basically a sign between people who are on this quest to basically find the wizarding, you know, like magical things, like, you know, if you were on the quest for the Holy Grail.
Yeah, so whenever he's describing this in the book, I'm just seeing wizards like with the symbol and like the like little like hey nod, like the little like tip up of the chin type nod. And that's just like that's what it is, right? It's just like a, yeah. I know what you know. I know what you believe. So I thought that's how I always like kind of envisioned it. But yeah, I mean, we learn a lot here about just very quickly, because we're coming very quickly, pick up from where we left off of the last chapter. And like I said, at the end of the last episode, he kind of snaps out of the like weird, awkward person and is like, oh, this is something I want to talk about. I'm very knowledgeable about. Please let me tell you everything about this.
Well, and he tells them that the best way to tell them what this is by reading this story, The Tale of the Three Brothers from the Tales of Beetle Bard, which Hermione, of course, just happens to have a copy of because Dumbledore gave it to her. So he asks her to read the story. And I love when she starts reading the story that she's like, they're traveling along a long, windy road at twilight. And then Ron's like, no, it's midnight. That's what my mom always said because it's scarier. And then she's like, she just gives him the look like, shut the heck up.
She just stares daggers at him. I love it.
It's really funny. So the story is that the three brothers have run across a river that they need to cross. And of course, they're wizards. And so they conjure a bridge that allows them to cross the river. And who should they meet but Death? And Death is very frustrated that they've crossed this river because he has claimed many lives with this river. And I love Harry's like, wait, Death is talking? And they're like, fairy tale, Harry. And he's like, oh, right. And so Death congratulates them. And Death, being cunning, finds a way to hopefully reclaim them by giving them their heart's desire, which the oldest brother decides he wants the wand that can never be beaten in a duel. The second brother, wishing to humiliate, I love the way she says this, wishing to humiliate Death further, asks for a way to bring those back from the dead that have been lost. And the third brother, who is the wisest, not trusting Death, asks for a way to become invisible, even to Death himself. And so Death takes off his cloak and gives him a cloak of invisibility. And, of course, we then continue with what happens to the three brothers, which is, of course, the first brother, quite an idiot, decides to go get in a duel with somebody he doesn't like, that he is
like
very,
an idiot.
Yeah, very mad at, and then, of course, decides to wildly brag about having the best wand in the world, and, of course, is killed that very night for that wand, and Death claims its first brother. The second brother, which I thought was really interesting here, and I think this is something that I was fascinated by, Dre, because it really connects with a lot of other things that we've talked about. We've talked about ghosts. We've talked about this idea of there being a veil. And this really, of course, leads into this idea of what happens at life after death. And so the brother takes the rock that he was given by Death, turns it over, and brings back a girl that which he loves. And yet when she comes back, she is very... she's basically... not even a quarter of what she was. She has been pulled beyond the veil back, and she is unhappy. And so the brother kills himself. So what I really loved with this idea of this, that she pulls so much in here to kind of help explain her philosophy slash, like, I guess almost like theology of what she thinks about death through this fairy tale. It's so smart.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's very dark, right? This part of the story gets kind of dark, especially for a children's tale. But I also like that, you know, she talks about pulling back this woman from the afterlife and how she's unhappy, and clearly the brother knows that she's unhappy, which makes him unhappy, and he realizes the only way to join that his only way to join her is to, you know, commit this act. But I think it's also a good lesson for people in general, right? Like wanting to surround yourself with people who don't really want to be there and not being able to be yourself and where you belong. It's really not a great feeling, right? Like you don't want to be around that. You shouldn't force things to work and to happen. You know, and I think that that's also a good lesson for the living as well as obviously the dead, apparently. So I like that each of the little like mini brother stories has sort of a real way. I mean, some of them are more obvious than others, but they all have like a real life lesson you can apply before you're faced with death.
Yeah.
Just saying. And that there's one overarching story as well. Like there's an overarching moral, and then each kind of individual brother has his own mm-hmm. story as well.
Well, and the third brother, of course, wears his invisibility cloak. And then when he's reached a ripe old age, he takes it off and he greets death as an old friend and went with him gladly, departing life as equals, because in that he has been able to live life to his fullest. You know, he has had to not worry about that. In fact, he hasn't had the worries of the other brother. One of the things I think you really kind of get is that this youngest brother has dealt with life on its own terms. And then he also deals with death on its own terms. And so there's a real beauty to this story, and like all good fairy tales, has some very important messages for everyone.
I think the way she describes it is that, you know, he greets death as an old friend kind of on his own terms, right? And that he didn't want for too much. He lived within the comfort of what he could do and what was expected of him to do. And that's not to say that you shouldn't have ambitions and drive, but keeping them in check against your ego, which is what his other brother faced, right? And with those desires that are unreasonable, like his second brother faced, you know, he was able to create a happy and fulfilling life without being outrageous, right? And I think that that's a great story. And I think it's, you know, a good story in general, just to, you know, just to remember that, like, death is not necessarily something to be feared or anything like that. You just have to go with it. And when your time is there, your time is there, right? Which becomes such an important lesson as we go through the rest of this book.
So as she finishes the story, she's like, that's it. And he's like, well, those are the Deathly Hallows. And she's like, what? And so he begins to draw the symbol, which is the Elder Wand, the vertical line, and then the stone, the stone, the resurrection stone, which is the circle, and then the lines that create the invisibility cloak or the triangle. And so the idea of this is that this is, of course, a children's story, but together, he says, if one has all of the Deathly Hallows, it makes one the master of death. And they're like, wait, what do you? Master of death.
Wait, what?
Yeah. And so, of course, Hermione finds this incredulous that any of this can be true. And yet, of course, they talk about this idea of like, well, you know, there are invisibility cloaks. And he said, well, you know, yes, there are. There are those cloaks that, you know, have had a disillusionment charm or, you know, some bedazzling hex or woven that have been woven with demiguy's hair, which, of course, we all know from Fantastic Beasts series now. But that those all fade in years. So a true invisibility cloak is one that never fades, that its user is always concealed. No matter what spells are cast at it. And of course, I love that he's like, how many cloaks have you ever seen like that, Miss Granger? And of course, the Trinity looks at each other like, well, I mean, we use it all the time.
I mean, they're like, there's one under my butt right now.
Exactly. Well, and it's so interesting because even though, basically, they literally have proof that these exist, Hermione is still having a very tough time accepting this idea, and she thinks it's really ridiculous. And I love that he's like, well, she says, how do you know they can be real? And he says, well, prove they're not. And she's like, well, that's completely ridiculous. How can I prove it doesn't exist? Do you expect me to get a hold of all the pebbles in the world and test them? That would be insane. Just because you claim anything's real, if only the basis of believing in it, and nobody's proved it doesn't exist. And he's like, that's right. I'm glad you're opening your mind. And it's just what we really have here is Hermione's empiricism against belief. Hermione is an empiricist. She only believes what she can see. And so she has such a scientific mind, it's very hard for her, even being a wizard and a witch that lives in a world with magic, to conceive of these type of things. And I think that's it's something that's interesting because Rowling is really, I think, starting to show a little bit of her cards here, in the sense that normally she speaks through Hermione, and yet here Hermione is subtly getting put in her place by somebody who we wouldn't really necessarily think would put her in her place in any way, shape, or form, and Xenophilius Lovegood, and that there is more to life than what you can see. You know, there's more to life than science. There's, you know, all of these things. Like, there's more to life than just what we can see, taste, touch, and feel.
I mean, that's definitely the message here. I also think that, you know, he leaves an opportunity, though, he doesn't completely shut her down and is like, well, you're too sciencey, ma'am. Like, you know, he just says, open your mind. I think there's so many things even science couldn't prove 10 years ago, 20 years ago that now totally exist and that we have and can prove that, you know, things are, you know, like you can, maybe it'll eventually be proved. But yes, based on the way you're describing it, you can't also completely discount the fact that these things exist, right? Which is also very science forward thinking, right? He kind of used the same thought process on her. Like, you can't prove it exists, but you also cannot prove that it doesn't exist, right? And so, you know, you have to open your mind to the fact that it could exist because you can't disprove it, which is a very Hermione thought process to embody, right? Is this idea that I can't necessarily disprove it, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's not true. And, you know, we'll come to learn more and more about these three elements. And I think we've kind of already heard about two of them before throughout the last, you know, six books and part of this book. We're starting to hear about them more and more. And so I think it's interesting. And I think what Harry kind of starts thinking about and playing around with is it almost doesn't matter if it's real, because clearly somebody believes it to be true. And this idea that they think it's real makes it dangerous enough that it doesn't matter if it's real or not. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, because we have this idea of like the Elder Wand, and it, and, right, and the legend of the Elder Wand is that it can only be captured if you beat Defeat. Its previous owner. That's Correct. How you become the true master of it. And this is also the idea where they think of, you know, that the Elder One has been known by other names. We also have Hermione asking, like, what does the Peverell family have to do with this? And this is where he's like, are you kidding me? They have every... You've just been teasing me this whole time, right? Because, like, you said you're new to this quest. And he's like, they're... The Peverells or the original owners of the Hallows, you know, we believe them to be the original three brothers, the brothers Antioch, Cadmus, and Ignoitus, that they're the original owners of the Hallows. And at that point, he walks downstairs, and I love the kids having this conversation, like, is this true? Is this not true? And
I do love that his reaction when he says that to her is like, oh, I thought you were a beginner. He's got like this, I don't know. I always read him with having this sort of like jolly response to that. But yeah, then to your point, they kind of start talking about what does this mean and processing it through all the information they've just gotten.
And which one that they would prefer. And it's interesting to see them all say different things. And so, and you know, of course, Ron wants the wand, Hermione wants the cloak, and Harry wants the stone. And
shock. I'm shocked. I'm just kidding. I'm totally not surprised.
It's funny though, because Harry wants the stone for a very good reason, because he already has an invisibility cloak. So it's not as though he chose the stone over the invisibility cloak. He just chose it because he already has it.
But there's a part of you that also knows that he has faced death and right, like relationships ended way too soon a lot more than the others. Like, so him wanting to reconnect with those people is not at all out of the realm of, like, of course you want to, you know, meet your parents, like, even if it's for a short period of time. And mm-hmm. Of course you want to reconnect with Sirius and Dumbledore and all these things. Like, he is consistently haunted by not having answers from these people and not knowing what they know and what mm-hmm. they think and who they are. So of course he's going to want to, like, I don't blame him. Right. So it's not surprising to me that he chooses that one. And Hermione being the logic based being she is, of course, wants the one that lets her continue to learn and grow more than the rest of them.
Right.
So.
Well, and I mean, you know, with them talking about, you know, with that stone, would those people, Harry, really want to come back? You know, would they really, I mean, it's Sirius and your parents, like, they wouldn't really want to come back. And so I also think that there's a really interesting discussion because, you know, Ron, of course, is like, who would want the best wand ever? And it would just be amazing. And, you know, and then he's like, well, of course I wouldn't go blabbing around to everyone that I had it. And Hermione's like, really? Really? Mm-hmm. Right. I don't believe that at all. So
I know. I did love that.
But I do love, too, this is also where we get to the conversation of them talking about do we have the cloak? I mean, the cloak that Harry has is not like any other cloak. And this is where, again, Ron really comes in handy in these few chapters because Ron's grown up in the wizarding world. He knows all of these things. He knows all of these legends and these stories, these fairy tales and these ideas. And what I love is that he's like, the cloak that we have is perfect. And you don't find those every day. Do we actually maybe possibly have one of these things?
Well, and they don't say it, but something else to consider in the discussion is the source, right? They got it from Dumbledore, who also gave them the Deathly Hallows symbol. So clearly he knows it, right? So, I mean, that plays a factor in the decisioning too. I think it's just so interesting. Like, yeah, they start talking about like, is it possible? Really? I don't know. Maybe.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because as they're kind of waiting for Xenophilius to come back, Harry goes up to Luna's room and she's got this beautiful mural on her wall that she's painted of five faces, and it's Harry, Ron, and Hermione, Ginny, and Neville. And she has this thread that's running through all of them. And the thread is actually the word friends. And Harry realizes this and feels like great affection for Luna, which I love the way he describes that, because it's so heartwarming. And Harry's had very little heartwarming. But at this moment, too, he actually begins to realize something is wrong. Like there's no clothes lying around. There's nothing here that says Luna's
dusty.
Been
it hasn't
here.
Been slept in. Yeah.
Yeah. Which really bothers him. And so he, as he heads downstairs, he asks Xenophilius, where is Luna? Because he's told them that she's off picking, some kind of fruit. I can't remember the name right off the top of my head.
No, she's like getting something from the river. Like some plimpy somethings mm-hmm. for a soup.
Yes. Yeah. And so he asked him point blank, you know, where is she? I don't think she's been here for weeks, actually. And we find out that he needs them to stay. The Death Eaters are on the way. He needs them to stay because if he doesn't give up Harry Potter to them, his Luna has been taken and he doesn't know what they're going to do with her. And the figures approach on the broomsticks, and this is where everything just goes to basically hell in a handbasket.
It's really astute of him to recognize that is right, that something's not right, that things aren't there. I mean, not everyone would be able to identify that, right? Like most people may not even pick up on that. And so it's really good for him to have caught that. But yeah, I mean, he also in this sort of confrontation notes that the Quibbler has sort of had a change of heart as well. And has started printing Harry's picture as the undesirable number one, which we know to be ministry or Death Eater propaganda. And so like everything is just sort of like coming to a head, and we're starting to understand why he was so nervous and upset and just distraught when they first got there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and basically what happens is Hermione was right. It is an Arumpet horn and a errant spell explodes that, and as the Death Eaters come, and the Death Eaters are searching for them, they use the Hominum Revelo spell, which lets them know that there is somebody upstairs, because Xenophilius is telling them, you know, Potter and his friends are here, and they're not believing him because he keeps apparently having called them back, you know, over the last few weeks trying to get his Luna back. So Hermione has an idea. They're under all this rubble and they're trying to get out as Xenophilius is trying to get upstairs to show them that they're actually there. And she has this idea, so she pulls out the invisibility cloak and gives it to Ron to put on instead of Harry, which is a little bit strange. And she has them hold her hands. And so as Xenophilius makes his way into the room, she cries Obliviate and then blows a hole in the floor, the second floor, and they end up apparating to who knows where, because we don't know yet.
They fall through, they blast through. The two Death Eaters that are there that he has summoned are trying to kind of make their way through the rebel, all the rubble that has fallen and everything that's going on. And they disapparate. They're gone. That's the end of the chapter.
It's a busy chapter, and there's so much that's happened in these last two chapters that have really like brought us a lot of focus. So I'm really excited to see, because honestly, the rest of the book never stops from here. Really, like it's going to just it's just not going to
stop. We also don't have much downtime at all. There's a lot that happens, and they keep going and going and going and going, which is nice because I'm kind of tired of sitting on mountain sides in my tent hoping to find the solution will just ultimately divine itself to me through osmosis of nature or whatever.
Nope. We're not going to have any more of that, Drea. So,
woo!
But before we get there, before we get to next week, Chapter 22, The Deathly Hallows, where can everybody find you?
Sure. You can find me on Instagram at Drea Kaufman or on Twitter at PCF Chick.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under the name MattRushing02. You can also find me there on Twitter with the tag The 602 Club. So follow me there. That's the show that I do on the TFM network, which is all about fandoms that we love that aren't Star Trek. So you can also find me on that network doing two other shows, Literary Treks as well as The Orb. Literary Treks is about the books and comics of Star Trek. And then The Orb is about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I do those with Chris Jones. And then you can find me here on the Nerd Party Network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. So please join us there. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.